It is the Brett Witterbull Show, News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Great to be here with you, and happy to invite you to be a part of the conversation over the next 3 hours. We got great stuff happening. Later on this hour, Rick Gates is going to come by. We're going to talk about this first run of time for President Biden being in office and what it looks like for the 2022 midterms. I know it's never too early to start talking about that. Later on, we'll be joined by my good friend Bill Roggio. Brett Jensen stops by. And, of course, we'll catch up with Bo Thompson and Mark Garrison, who will preview Charlotte at 6 much later in the program. But first, I want to comment on Nick Clegg. Nick Clegg, this is the guy that is handing down the ban on Trump at Facebook for another year. It's going to be 2 years. There's a 2-year suspension from Facebook. Nick Clegg is not an American citizen. And it bothers me greatly that he's making this call because he's a Brit. And in fact, he's a pinko leftist British former member of parliament. He's one of those elites that looks down on you because you live in the Carolinas or Texas or Kentucky. He's one of these guys who talks like this. Well, of course we're not going to have Donald Trump on the platform for the next 2 years. He is positively vicious. Vicious, I say. It's absolutely unbelievable to think for a moment. Who is this guy? Honestly, have you had it with the social media police? Who the hell is Jack Dorsey? He's a guy who brags about microdosing. He's got a nose ring. I came out of California. I've seen rings in a lot of places just going in the supermarket, okay? Doesn't really bother me. But he's a weirdo. He's like a Charlie Manson-looking weirdo with a nose ring. And he's got billions and billions and billions of dollars, and he determines what gets out in the social media. Nick Clegg is one of these super elites. Yes, my good man, would you please park my car? You know, I'm the vice president of marketing here. I don't give a rat's rip. I went to Oxford, Cambridge, the London School of Economics, and of course, I was educated at the finest institutions. He is literally one of these soft as baby dew, fat-faced Brits who hasn't seen the sun in 25 years. That's the guy who decides your former president doesn't get on Facebook. He is a perfect component to match with that other weirdo Zuckerberg. So this is what you got. You got a group of these people, unelected, unaccountable, and you're, by the way, allowing him to use your data, your personal private data, to weaponize it against you so that you get propaganda. Zuckerberg and Dorsey and the whole lot of them were directly involved in making sure people didn't know what the real story was that we're starting to get now out of the Wuhan Virology Lab in China. See, you want to talk about a devious motive, because I have a podcast that is the Devious Motives podcast, but you want to talk about the most devious of the devious? It's the elite, effete folks over in Europe who believe with every fiber of their malleable, crooked, corrupted being that they are substantially better than you, just as people. You know that scene in Titanic when they're pushing the women and the old ladies out of the way so that the rich guy can get into the lifeboat? That's who this guy is, Nick Clegg. Clegg with two G's. I know I'm Brett with two T's, but that's American, baby. He's Nick Clegg. And I'm in charge of who gets put on the platform. And we have decided, we've had a meeting, and we have found the former president of the United States not to be worthy of the Facebook platform. Please bring me another pound of fudge and some port. It's nearly 3 o'clock, and I'm not drunk yet.
I'm not saying Nick Clegg's a drunk. I'm just saying. He's one of those elites over in England, and he is a progressive liberal that wants your gasoline to be $9 an hour, doesn't want you to own firearms, doesn't believe you should eat meat, doesn't believe any of that, has disdain and true hatred for the United States of America. And you know what? Facebook can do what they want. It's a private operation, a publicly traded company. You can invest in the company. You don't have to use the company. Whatever it is. I got Facebook pages. Sure thing. But I just want you to understand who it is that's getting that's making these decisions. They are unelectable. They are unaccountable. And to be honest with you, in my opinion, Nick Clegg isn't worthy to shine the shoes of the poorest American. That's my opinion. 704-570-1110. 704-570-1110. No, we don't need a traffic sounder yet. It's only 10:30 past. It's not 12:30 past yet. So the Army is doing something that I think is absolutely incredible. The U.S. Army's official Instagram account attempted to recruit young people online Thursday by asking them to look at a series of jobs that might fit them purely based on their zodiac sign. What are they doing to the United States military? First of all, they declare everybody in the United States military extremists, white supremacists, ne'er-do-wells, troublemakers that have to be investigated. They're ramming through CRT, and now they're asking you, yo, bro, what's your sign? Are you an Aries with a rising Jupiter, a trine quadrat in your thing? Then you might want to be someone who thinks about becoming a mess cook. Wondering what your zodiac sign says about the kind of soldier you could be in the Army? You have to click through our Instagram story to find the answer because our lips are sealed over here, said the branch's official Instagram account. In the story section of the account, the Army listed possible advanced individual training assignments based on a person's birth month and the alignment of the stars. Paganism much? When does your zodiac sign become relevant to this? The service asked in a short video. Well, the video offered up by people born from December 22 to January 20 or Capricorns might consider joining the Army signing up as a human intelligence collector. A human intelligence collector is the path that fits your smarts, going to great lengths to successfully analyze and understand your enemies. The Army suggests that Cancers, June 21st to July 22nd, might be a good fit for the field veterinary service. What war did we lose? What war did we lose? The Army suggested all kinds of jobs for people, including JAG Corps attorney for people born February 20th to March 20th. They're the Pisces, don't you know? Oh, cold as ice. Perfect lawyers. Actually, I don't even know what I'm talking about. Who's into the Zodiac? It's 2021. That's like a 1977 thing. I mean, what are you doing? Listening to the Captain and Tennille, straightening out your big old furry mustache, unbuttoning another button in your shirt so your chest hair is sticking out and you're feeling kind of groovy because you're going out to the disco tonight with Larry Daliopoulos. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT, Brett Witterbull Show. Happy to welcome back to the show. It's been far, far too long, and I'm so happy we get to catch up with him. He is Rick Gates, former Trump deputy campaign chairman, and of course, his book is terrific. If you haven't picked it up yet, you should. Wicked Game, and he joins us now on the line. Rick, good afternoon. I appreciate you making time for us today.
Brett, great to be with you again.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, we see jobs numbers coming out. We see discussions about filibusters getting demolished. And at the same time, we see an incredibly precarious position that we are in the world today. We've got Russian hackers targeting our companies. We've got the Keystone XL pipeline being shut down. And, of course, the border is a disaster. How much worse can it get? And how do you assess the current condition as we look at things in the body politic right now?
Well, certainly, given the leadership that we have currently in government, can get a lot worse. When you have a president that is weak and frail and is being challenged almost on every foreign front, questioning the national security of the United States and putting us in perilous position, I think, as an American, I'm really worried. I mean, you didn't have any of these types of activities under President Trump. You didn't have one instance of, you know, potential warfare happening. Mm-hmm. Certainly, the cyber attacks are a clear and present danger to the United States. And, you know, Biden's going to be at the G7 summit next week. And I hope he's got to deal with these issues because we are seeing just a kind of cataclysmic series of events that is not only hurting us as a nation, but it's hurting our economy as well. Every time one of these cyber attacks hit, I mean, look at what they're doing to just, the private industry as well. And they're attacking, obviously, critical resources, mm-hmm. meat facilities, pipeline production. And I think you're going to continue to see this over an extended period of time because the Biden administration hasn't done anything about it.
And still, against this backdrop, we have uncertainty within our very officials there in Washington. The highest paid official in government is Tony Fauci. He seems to be, spinning a different yarn every single day. It's very likely that there was a leak from that Wuhan virology lab, but we can't get the straight information. And it feels like this president and this administration is reluctant to take a tougher line on China.
Yeah, and it's very interesting. I don't see why Biden won't come out and just be transparent unless he's trying to play some game to leverage it against the Chinese because he's so weak in so many other fronts, which from a political standpoint is probably the case. Because otherwise, for Biden to throw Fauci under the bus, and I think at this point everybody is pretty in the know that this absolutely came out of the lab. And again, I was talking to a friend of mine today, and whether you have different opinions or former President Trump or not, I mean, he called this at the beginning. I mean, it's like his instincts kicked in again. He knew exactly what was happening, maybe not all the details, but he called it out. And fast forward almost 2 years later, and it turns out that he's absolutely accurate. So I think it's a serious situation. There's no question Fauci has been flip-flopping, and it's very dangerous, the partnerships and the commentary that he's been providing with his Chinese counterparts. It's just absolutely unreal to see these emails unfold. And certainly he's in, from what I understand from a few members of Congress, he's in perjury trouble. There's a very strong sense that he perjured himself during some of his testimony on Capitol Hill. Do they pursue it? I don't know. I think Biden's too weak to do it. He won't want to do it. But Biden's it's like you said, you're holding the stick. Biden's got to do something about it, or at the end, he's going to be the one that at fault for this.
Plus or minus, we're 500 days away from the midterm elections. Obviously, feels like it'll be a lifetime, but it is certainly coming at some point. The president's going to be in North Carolina. Former president's going to be in North Carolina, speaking at the North Carolina Republican Party gathering. Coming up this weekend, and we have essentially a stalled domestic agenda. The Biden team, Chuck Schumer, they seem like the gang that can't shoot straight. They're about to get a very heavy critique and a compare and contrast from the former president as he comes back onto the stage. Rick, what do we expect as we begin to see the fault lines form for what's going to be heading towards the midterms?
Yeah, here's the great news if you're a conservative or Republican. The Democrats are giving us gift after gift in us having a record on their lack of any substantive achievements, and more importantly, the way that they are tearing this country down piece by piece. So what the Republicans will be able to do, and I think they have an excellent shot at winning back the House and picking up a couple of seats in the Senate. And that's because if it's done right, Republicans all across the country will be able to use the lack of accomplishments by the Democrats, and more importantly, how it's going to hurt Americans and their wallets and their pocketbooks, because that's really what it's going to come down to. And so I think you're going to see a very strong, resilient Republican Party. I was looking at some polling data the other day. Biden's approval rating, while it's still above 50, it's just above 50 at 51. Donald Trump is number two. And that's, you're talking against Chuck Schumer, Mitch McConnell, Kevin McCarthy, Nancy Pelosi. So there is a very continuous, strong dissatisfaction with Congress across the board. And I think that's going to empower the former president to come out and sell his agenda and keep that agenda pressing in the American front. And I think that's going to lead to victories for the Republican Party, both in the House and the Senate in 2022.
Boy, it's been far too long. I'd love to get back together with you again soon to break down some more of these issues as they become clearer. Rick Gates, so good to have you on the program, and look forward to our next visit, my friend.
Thanks, Brett. Have a good weekend.
Take care. That's Rick Gates. I'm Brett Witterbull. Lots to unpack there. We'll get your reaction straight ahead. News Talk 1110.99. News Talk 1110.99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Witterbull Show. We are going to effort to connect with Breaking Brett Jensen here in a matter of moments. There's been a lot of play in the wake of his confrontation with the governor, Roy Cooper, and certainly wanted to check in with him about that. One of the other things, while we're efforting him, one of the other things I want to play for you that I think is important that you hear is the sort of fake news, and I mean actual, real, true fake news. And I know it sounds weird to say, right? What do you mean, real, true fake news? I'm going to play a clip for you. This is from CNN last night. This is cut 25. Erin Burnett and Jim Acosta. They're talking about former President Trump. I don't talk a lot about Trump. I talk a lot about the current news of the day. But this is such a great indication. They're now making stuff up on CNN. They're now absolutely making stuff up on CNN. And I want you to hear this. This is cut number 25. Let her rip.
This just in, former President Donald Trump has been asking advisors if he could somehow reassume the presidency this year.
What?
Despite losing the election to now President Joe Biden.
Uh-huh.
A well-placed source familiar with the conversation tells our Jim Acosta tonight that Trump has been hearing the same far-fetched suggestions from conservative commentators and allies and has then, you know, internalized that and gone to ask others, quote, what do you think of this? What do you think of this theory? So Jim Acosta's out front. Jim, this is it's just really,
I
know it's like La La Land, but this is bizarre that we're even having this conversation.
Then why are you having
it? How seriously is Trump believing this insane theory?
It's insane. It's very disturbing, Aaron, but he believes it. He thinks that there's some chance that he could somehow be reinstated as president this year. And what he's been doing over the last several weeks is reaching out to advisors, reaching out to allies, and they've basically been trying to talk him off the ledge, Aaron. What Trump has been asking, I'm told by one source, one well-placed source familiar with these conversations, he's been asking, what do you think of this theory? And what this one advisor told me is that he's been told it's not true.
Okay.
Now, this advisor who is familiar with these conversations went on to say that that, you know, it doesn't appear that Trump really believes that he could somehow be reinstated or assume the presidency later on this year. But this source went on to say, you know, listen, you know, Trump is listening to all kinds of things these days, and he is trying to grasp at straws to see if there's some way
he
can get back into the White House.
Okay, so did you hear what they just did? I mean, I just played you a minute of this. Did you hear what they just said? They said the president is hearing from some people that he could somehow assume the presidency. It's not going to happen. It's a bonkers, weirdo, QAnon-y kind of a thing that's happening, that's being said, all right? But you hear Aaron Burnett say, essentially, hey, this is really crazy. It's not going to happen. Jim, what do you think? Yeah, it's not going to happen. It's a really crazy thing. Some people are talking to him about this, but he doesn't believe it, and it's not really. It's not a story. They have to use the name to try to gin up ratings on a failing network like CNN. It's incredible. That's why I want to talk to a real credible journalist like Brett Jensen, who joins us now, Breaking Brett Jensen, at Brett Jensen on Twitter, Brett underscore Jensen on Twitter, and he joins us now. You're getting a lot of attention, and I think for all the right reasons, Brett Jensen, in calling out the wall of silence from the Cooper team over the last 14 months, 400 days or so. It's incredible. I'm hearing buzz from people, and I'm actually hearing from others who are saying, you know, this is so great that you stood up to Roy Cooper and he acted like he never heard of it. Your reaction so far as to how this has been going?
A little surprised, to be perfectly honest with you. You know, because as far as I know, none of the Charlotte media touched it. As far as I know, maybe none of the state media touched it. You know, WRAL, whatever, Raleigh News and Observer. But after they even wrote about it, but but yeah, it's weird. I mean, I had somebody, because, you know, back in a former life, I was a Clemson beat writer with FoxSports.com. Mm-hmm. And I had the number one podcast for Clemson sports reach out to me and say, hey, used to be a Clemson writer. I saw what happened. You want to come on my podcast? And I was on their podcast for like 30 minutes talking about it. a media outlet up in New York, you know, a well-respected media outlet up in New York. Wrote an actual article about it and then put it out on Twitter, and they do sports and they actually wrote about it. So up in New York. So, you know, I know that people at Fox have been interested in it. They wanted to see the video clip as well. So it's just, you know, Fox News, Fox Radio. So it's gotten a little bit more attention than I fully anticipated, to be perfectly honest with you. And by the way, real quick, let me jump on that CNN thing for a second as a reporter.
Let me
break that down, because I was listening to it. It was the first time I'd heard that, okay?
Okay.
So there are a couple of things about that. Number one, it's you hear Acosta literally say, Trump doesn't believe it. But he literally says this. Oh, he doesn't believe it. He knows it's far-fetched. He doesn't believe it. But, you know, he's just listening to what other people might have to say.
Sure.
And so, but yet she starts the conversation, does Trump really believe this? Like, that's insane. Like, what is he doing? And then Jim Acosta, literally his first words were, yeah, Aaron, it's really insane. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. And then you go down and then you bury the lead. You bury the lead, not three paragraphs down, but about a full 45 seconds into it. But Trump doesn't believe it. Oh, really? Because you failed to mention that in the very first part.
That's right.
And so in terms of journalism, that is, it's just, it's disgusting. That's not journalism. And it's just not. And the other thing is, and like you said, like with all due respect to CNN, when you're losing out to Nickelodeon Kids, you got problems.
Exactly right. Look, the fact of the matter is, some people call... let's take people behind the curtain for a second. We get all kinds of calls from all kinds of people with all kinds of theories, right? You're doing a show. I'm doing a show. People call up. They've got secret information. Or they've got this. They've got that. And you kind of try to vet it. You try to figure out what's going on. And if it doesn't add up, then you don't go with it. But they present it right up front as saying, this is nuts. This is wacky. This is crazy. Yeah, but he doesn't believe it. So, you know. Well, then why are we talking about it, Jim? Why are you
the
lead story?
That's literally the point. If he doesn't believe it, right, then literally why are you attaching his name to it and trashing him? Anybody, it doesn't matter that it's Trump. I mean, just in general. Like,
sure.
What? Why are you doing that when you literally said he doesn't believe it? I truly don't understand that. Oh, and just here's another caveat for your listening audience. CNN's below Discovery ID as well.
Wow, Discovery ID. You know what? That's a really good mystery that could be solved. What happened to their ratings?
What? I can tell you what happened to
the ratings. Yeah, well, no kidding. It's a chalk outline. It says CNN on the sidewalk. let me ask you this, just as a journalist, right? Because you've been chasing, you no doubt during, because I saw it, during the entirety of the pandemic coverage that you did, right? You had to run down all kinds of things and find out, is this really happening? Is that really happening? And you certainly vet a lot of information. When I say to you, Brett Jensen, you know, some people are saying... What's the first question that comes into your mind?
The first question I have is, what people?
Yeah, who? What people?
What people?
Brett, people what are people? Saying that we think that you are, you know, no. Well, who is it? Who's saying it? Is it the crazy guy talking to the lamppost downtown? I mean, who is it? Who's saying it?
Yeah, well, who are they? Where are they affiliated? And what's their connection?
There you go. Great.
Let's start there, and then we move forward. Okay, a little bit of credibility. Okay, don't really know much about them, but okay, they seem semi-legit. Okay, even if you're semi-legit, I'll listen to part two and then go from there. But yeah, no, I don't understand. That one-minute segment encapsulates everything that's wrong with CNN.
Yep.
And that's why no one watches them, and that's why they've been circling the bowl, getting ready to go down the drain.
There we go. Brett Jensen, have a wonderful weekend, my friend. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Winterville Show. Let's check in with some of the great callers that are out there. Let me go first up to Carrie. Carrie, welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Brett, hello.
I'm well. Oh, Terry. How are you, buddy?
Yeah.
I appreciate you.
Good to talk to you again. I never miss your program.
Thank you, my man.
I know I'm off topic, but I was born on June 6, 1955.
That's awesome.
11 years after the invasion of Europe.
Yes, sir.
I am very proud of the date that I was born.
Amen.
And my father was not at Normandy, but he was a soldier at that time, and he served for 30 years, and he became a first sergeant. But I remember him telling me about the men at a very young age who stormed those beaches.
That's right.
I am proud of those men.
Amen.
Who died on June 6, 1944, so I can be born free on June 6, 1955, and I'm still free in June 6, 2021.
Great stuff. What a great remembrance there. That is amazing.
And I'll listen to you later, okay?
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate you being out there. That's Terry, and I think he speaks for all of us when we talk about this debt of gratitude. I'll have a more commentary on that. In fact, I'm going to be in on Sunday, which is the 6th. I'll be doing the WBT Big Story starting at 7 a.m. Yeah, 7 a.m. So I am absolutely happy to get up early and share those remembrances on that day. I'll have some thoughts on that as well during this day. We go to Tony next up. Hello, Tony. Welcome to the program.
What's up, buddy? Nice talking to you.
Thank you.
I'll be quick. 2 points. First thing is I'm a Latino voter Republican,
yes,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think I called you a few times. I don't even remember my accent. But I tell you what, it really bothered me when the Democrat, media, the liberals can say whatever they want. and nobody said anything about it, right? What Trump did, what a Republican says is wrong, but when they do it, it's okay. So I can't stand the double standard, brother. It's like, let's be real. You guys lying, and you know, and you selling smoke. When you cook a grill, smoke is smell good, then it disappears.
That's right.
It pissed me off. And the second thing, my brother, I was in New York about a week and a half ago. We took my daughter to do a helicopter ride around the city.
Wow.
You know, that was the plan, just to, you know, because I grew up in New Jersey. And God approached me and wanted to show me some video and weed and, you know, and stuff like that. I said, dude, calm down. I don't want anything. I'm fine. You know what this guy did to me, brother? He pulled a knife.
Are you kidding me?
He pulled a knife on me. And I got my hands in my package, right? Because, you know, that's how I talk to people. He said, take that gun and I kill you.
Whoa. Because
I said that I don't want a DVD or whatever crap he was selling.
Yeah.
So, and I look around, my brother, it's no cops anywhere. So for all those people that support, defund the police.
Yes.
Let me tell you, I'm a real testimony. You don't want that garbage because then we're done. Anyway, love you, bro. Love your show. And God bless you, man.
Thank you. God bless you, too, Tony. I appreciate you being... Okay, now I'm worried. See, now I'm concerned. Because I'm going to Gotham next week. So I got to be prepared, I guess. More prepared than I was expecting to have to be. Tony, I know you're still listening. I want you to hear this. This is cut 28. Cut number 28. AOC is at it again. And we'd love to get your reaction to this, folks. I've got so much great sound. I mean, I've got stuff that you are not going to believe and that you're not going to hear anyplace else. AOC says we need to stop building jails. We have to stop building jails. This is cut number 28. Fire it up.
And our complete gutting of support in our mental health system, both in the city and across the country, is absolutely correlated with both homelessness and incidents of violent crime. When you actually open the door to a jail and look at who's inside, an enormous amount of people are dealing with untreated mental health issues. And it is not acceptable for us to use jails as garbage bins for human beings. We need to treat people and see them as human. And so it is not a place for us to throw people for whom we don't want to invest in the actual holistic issues of their lives. If we want to reduce violent crime, if we want to reduce the number of people in our jails, the answer is to stop building more of them. The answer is to make sure that we actually build more hospitals. We pay organizers. We get people mental health care and overall health care, employment, etc. It's to support communities, not throw them away.
Okay, this is an interesting point that she raises, right? The fact that, well, we shouldn't build jails and warehouse people that have mental illness issues there in jails. She was asked at one point in this presentation in New York, she was asked about, well, what about all these hate crimes that are happening? And she goes, you know, overwhelmingly, the people that commit hate crimes are actually mentally ill and they're doing what they do. So here's the question I would have for AOC and Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib and the rest of the squad and the progressive liberals there in New York City who send these people to Washington, D.C. The question I would have is, what are you doing in the state of New York to allow people to be committed against their will if they're mentally ill? Because the ACLU will run interference all day, every day. The only people that they will lock up, that the ACLU will sit back and let you lock up, are conservatives. If you're a conservative, they'll be like, we got to lock you up. You got to get put away. You can't do it. But if you are an out of control madman, like what you just heard Tony talk about, guy comes up to him and says, you want DVDs, you want weed, whatever. Now, if that guy's got a mental health issue, you can't go get him committed because you're going to go in front of some liberal judge that's going to say the guy's got a right to walk down the street with no pants on, defecating on sidewalks. He's got a right to be a free range lunatic. No, you don't. You don't. And I'm sorry. I'll try your theory, AOC. But first, I want you to rescind the call to defund the police. You've got to enforce the laws. And then you can start working through who it is that's mentally ill. I love these poli-sci Congress critters. I was in a poli-sci class at Boston University. And they said that we don't need any more jails. What we really need is hugs. Hugs are better than cuffs. No. No, you need to lock up criminals. And if along the way you find out these are people who are mentally ill, get them the help that they need. And if necessary, go in front of a judge that will commit them to a facility so that they can either dry out, get off the drugs, or get the treatment they need. I support that 100%. The problem is the ACLU will not play ball. Facts. 704-570-1110. News Talk 1110-993-WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show, News Talk 1110-993 WBT. Great to be here with you. Our phone number is always 704-570-1110. And certainly you can pick up the pieces. We can pick up stuff from across the week and talk about sort of where we are as a country right now, okay? And here in Charlotte as well, of course. Again, our number 704-570-1110 to be a part of the discussion. Later on, in fact, it'll be the next segment. I'm going to bring on one of my favorite people to talk to is Bill Roggio. Bill Roggio is with the Long War Journal. And, you know, we're pulling out of Afghanistan and they've uncovered something that is pretty remarkable as it relates to the Taliban and our original mission of going into Afghanistan. You're going to want to definitely hear what it is that we're basically looking at as a result of that pullout from that battle and from that war that we have spent so much time on. It's a remarkable bit of information, and it's original research that they have done. It's important. It's important for anybody who has got a relative over there, if you've got a relation, if you've served over there, et cetera. I know you're going to want to hear about this as well. We were talking about AOC and her call to stop building jails. She doesn't want any more jails to be built. She wants, instead of jails being built, she wants to essentially say, listen, we're going to treat people as if they are all mentally ill or they have a mental illness or an addiction and they're not in their right minds. And so you don't want to throw them in jail. Look, I am a conservative person. I am a conservative person in my personal life. I'm also a conservative politically. My default position, though, is freedom. It's always freedom. And to be honest with you, I don't think somebody who has a mental issue, a competency issue, ought to be locked up in a jail for that. Okay, and so that's a problem. This idea that we're just going to throw people in jail because they're hard to manage. I do want to see them get the help that they need, if in fact that's what it is. But if in fact it's just pure evil and you're doing evil stuff. And it's not because you're mentally unbalanced or deranged or ill. Then we need to understand that there are evil people that need to be locked up. Conservative Review's got a story about this. Violent crimes are up dramatically across the country. In Chicago, shootings are up 36% over last year. Homicides are up 19%. In South Carolina, murders are up 25% in 2020 versus 2019. The 571 murders are the highest total since the state started recording those numbers back in 1960. That is South Carolina. As of May 7th, homicides in Atlanta are up 60% compared to the same period last year. A study of 34 U.S. cities discovered that homicides have spiked by 24% in the first quarter of 2021. The same time last year, they're up by 49% compared to the first quarter of 2019. In fact, 63 of the 66 largest cities in the United States are experiencing increases in at least one category of violent crime. In New York, the murder rate has skyrocketed 47% last year. This year, it's up another 17%. Last summer, when violent crime rates were soaring, AOC hypothesized that the crime rate was spiking because people were shoplifting bread. That's just an ignoramus talking, and I'm sorry, but that's what we've got. But there's something very pernicious about what she's doing in terms of her motive. Some could even call it a devious motive. And it's this. AOC was asked, cut number 29, AOC was asked by the people who were gathered there today. It was Chuck Schumer and AOC and a number of other leaders in the Bronx in New York talking about how it is we need to rehab and reform our justice system. And so one question comes up from an individual who says, hey, but what about gang crime? Gang crime is surging in a number of jurisdictions. We know in Chicago, a lot of the killings are gang related. In New York City, a lot of the killings are gang related. It's gang on gang violence. And this is where she starts to get into Well, I'll let you judge for it. Go.
Well, again, I want to make sure that we talk about this issue in a holistic way. And one of the things, especially when we talk about gang violence, is the classification and the abuse of classification of gang violence. You'll have three youth on a corner, and all of a sudden, they will be classified as a gang. And so we really need to make sure that we break apart these numbers and understand that we're taking, again, the evidence-based approach to actually reducing safety. And it's time for us to question this correlation that safety just means throwing someone in a jail. Safety actually means preventing and reducing the incidence of violence in the first place.
She really thinks, like, she really does think that a cop can go arrest somebody and they go immediately to jail for like 10 years. There's a trial. And in fact, in many of these communities, AOC, you have district attorneys who do not want to prosecute anybody. George Gascon in California is a great example of this. Kim Fox in Chicago doesn't prosecute anybody. The St. Louis district attorney doesn't prosecute anybody. She really thinks that cops drive around and say, there's three black kids on the corner. There's three Hispanic kids on the corner. That's a gang. Let's throw them in jail. Does she not understand that, like, the New York City Police Department, the CMPD, the LAPD, the Chicago PD, the Washington, D.C. PD, the Atlanta PD, the Boston PD, the Miami PD, does she not understand that they have gang intelligence units so that they actually know if somebody's in a gang? Like, they actually go, hey, this is territory controlled by the Latin Kings. This is territory controlled by the New Generation Crips. This is a group. This is a neighborhood that is controlled by Crips. This is a neighborhood controlled by Bloods. This is a neighborhood controlled by MS-13. The police departments are sophisticated enough to understand where territory and turf is. She thinks, well, that the cops just drive around. They leap out and they go, there's three black people talking to each other. They're in a gang. Let's arrest them all. You got to have probable cause. You're going to have to take them in for a prosecution. You're going to have to do something. Cops don't just want to go out and arrest people to arrest people only to have them get kicked free because they're going to get in trouble. See, she doesn't have the basic understanding of how law enforcement works because she went to Boston University. She's an incredibly wealthy, privileged person. She drives her Tesla, parks it wherever the hell she wants, will not help her grandmother down in San Juan. And she's just, this is a dangerous policy because what she's doing is playing with the lives of people that live in communities that are shooting galleries because there are criminals and they're not mentally ill. They're criminals in many cases. And that gets adjudicated in court. But she just thinks like, okay, go grab him, put him in the jail. We just arrested him last night. He's in jail for 10 years now. It's not how it works. You got rid of the bail. They get a ticket. They go right back out on the street. Come on, Sandy. 704-570-1110, News Talk 1110-993-WBT. Boomer Von Cannon. News Talk 1110-993-WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show. Great to be here with you. We are efforting my good friend Bill Roggio from the Long War Journal. One of the things that I wanted to talk to him about is this drawdown that we're doing in Afghanistan. And it's a hugely important story because we have watched for the last almost 20 years our American men and women serving so honorably over there in Afghanistan. And we were told that there were peace talks that were going to happen and we were going to transition and all that sort of stuff. But at the core mission, it was about fighting al-Qaeda. We were trying to defeat the Taliban and al-Qaeda. And Bill Roggio from the longwarjournal.org and the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies joins me now on the line. Bill, it is great to have you here on the program. I was struck by something I read that you guys had put together as part of a report to the UN Security Council. They were quoting your sourcing on this, and that is the fact that al-Qaeda is still present and active inside of Afghanistan, and in fact, al-Qaeda is actively cooperating with the Taliban. What gives here? What's going on?
Hey, Brett. It's always great to talk to you, my friend. So that UN Security Council report, I always look forward to it. It's a very accurate, very reliable source. You're right that part of that information they did cite for me. And just they're very particular on their sourcing. There's only three external non-governmental sourced articles in there. And our the report that I put together, I want to say it was a month or so ago, mm-hmm. about al-Qaeda operating in 18 of Afghanistan's 34 provinces. This was based on Afghanistan or al-Qaeda's own propaganda. And it's not something that they make up. It's all I could cross-reference individual Afghan fighters being and commanders being killed in many of those provinces where they reported operations. So, you know, this is the same old story for me and my colleague Tom Jocelyn at the Long War Journal. Mm-hmm. We've been noting this for well over a decade when everyone has been trying to downplay al-Qaeda's presence, saying they've been defeated, degraded, pick a B-word, decimated, all of these things that have been said. Al-Qaeda just keeps chugging along, operating under the covers, supporting the Taliban. There's one other tidbit that's really, I actually think it's even more interesting the most interesting bit in here, and I'm going to read this to you verbatim.
Sure.
It's in a footnote on page 10, and it talks about Sirajuddin Haqqani.
Right.
He's the leader of the Haqqani network. He's also one of the Taliban's two deputy emirs. So he's in line for succession to lead the Taliban. He's listed by the U.S. as a specially designated global terrorist, and he's also, and his designation and designation of his individuals all talk about ties to al-Qaeda. Well, this is what the U.N. has to say to him. He, being Sirajuddin Haqqani, is also assessed to be a member of the wider al-Qaeda leadership.
Whoa.
Think about that for a second.
Whoa.
The deputy emir for the Taliban, the U.S. is saying, is also an al-Qaeda leader. Now, this isn't unprecedented, by the way. I've documented this with numerous Taliban leaders of U.S. militaries to call them dual-hatted al-Qaeda and Taliban leaders.
Right.
Sorry, I went long there, Brett, but the...
No. It's hugely important. Now, in addition to this, we know that the old folks that were running running Al Qaeda once upon a time, Zawahiri, and of course, Bin Laden before he was taken out, they had a very strong grip on the Al Qaeda operation. But now we see a new person emerge, and this is substantially important because of where he's essentially coming out of, which is Abu Ubaidah Yusuf al-Anabi, who is a guy from al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb. So essentially what we're talking about is he's an Algerian, Northwest Africa. That's where he hails from, and now he's likely to be the al-Qaeda leader, or one of the al-Qaeda leaders that the U.S. has put a $7 million bounty on.
Yeah, so Anabi, he's a longtime al-Qaeda commander. He served as the deputy emir for al-Qaeda's branch in North Africa. It's called al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb. He's held that role probably since its founding. And the French killed Abdul Malik al-Drukdal, which was his boss,
right,
in a raid late last year. Drukdal, by the way, all the way in Africa, was assessed by the French to be the third in line to succeed Zawahiri, who still is the emir of al-Qaeda. Keep that in mind. This is the guy who was Bin Laden's deputy on 9/11. He's still alive.
Wow.
Almost 20 years after 9/11. He's still alive. There's reports that he's been dead, but these are uncredible. The UN report even notes that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but Anabi is just one of many. Al-Qaeda has numerous branches. Al-Qaeda in the Indian subcontinent, that's Afghanistan, Pakistan, and India, and all the surrounding area countries. They have Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, Al-Qaeda, Shabab, which is Al-Qaeda in East Africa, and then they have a group in the Sahel. And they also have an organization inside Syria.
Yeah.
And the jihad is just, and I'll use a pun here, exploded. The footprint of the jihad has exploded since 9/11, where they were really primarily based in Afghanistan and had a small, operational setting in certain countries. Now they have actual branches with tens of thousands of fighters under their command in each branch.
So the idea that we leave Afghanistan, that's a footnote in history. We move on. Al-Qaeda is still intending to hit us and hit us as badly as they ever wanted to hit us in the past. We're just going to have to be pursuing it on a global scale then.
Yeah, I mean, look, I understand the arguments that are made to leave Afghanistan in many ways, given how poorly we've fought in Afghanistan. How much money we've wasted there, it's hard for me to argue to stay there.
Yep.
I can accept arguments to leave Afghanistan and in many ways support them. What I don't like is whitewashing the Taliban as we leave, pretending that they're not allied with al-Qaeda, pretending that the Taliban won't take over, pretending that al-Qaeda won't reestablish its training camps, and that al-Qaeda played a major role in the Taliban victory. That's what I don't like about this. If we want to leave, you want to make the argument and say we sunk a lot of money and a human toll and all of this, and Afghanistan needs to stand on its own. We'll do it to support them. That's fine. But signing a phony peace deal, that was an absolute disgrace. That I can't support.
Bill Roggio, follow his work, longwarjournal.org, longwarjournal.org. He's with the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies as well. And I'm going to get you and your guys back next week sometime to talk about what's going on in Africa, because it feels like it's ramping up, and I have a feeling we're going to be putting more and more troops into that fight as well. News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT, Brett Witterbull Show. Let's go out of the phones and check in with JD. Hello, JD. What's going on?
Hey, Brett. I hope you have a good weekend here.
Thank you, man. You too.
Anyways, you were talking about AOC.
Yes, sir.
Now, everything that comes out of her mouth, mm-hmm. to me, is like the Peanuts teacher. You know, the one, the wah, wah, wah.
Wah, 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 wah. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, could one of those reporters, why didn't one of the reporters ask AOC, hey, what about that Asian American that was cold clocked by that gentleman who had a 7-page long rap sheet.
40 arrests.
Should he have been out of jail?
Yeah.
This is what I'm talking about. The Democrats are using the issue on guns, and they're not using it on mental health. The most important thing is mental health and not guns.
Yeah.
Majority of these people that have had guns had mental health. I remember I got in a little argument on the Dr. Drew show in L.A. as one of the audience members with one of the liberal hosts right there. And she just attacked me saying I was naive and I didn't know what I was talking about. I actually did some reading here. Emma Goldman was a socialist here in the United States.
Oh, yeah.
She went back to Russia and she said it was one of the most – she basically changed. Also, another thing, too, was Karl Marx was a very big-time racist. He didn't like Mexicans and he didn't like blacks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why, I mean, this is the stuff that our kids are not being told. I remember I was in college class, and I had a guy that, I'm not joking around, but he looked exactly like Andre the Giant, my professor teacher.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He basically failed me because he told me he actually made me write a paper saying why socialism is good for America.
Yeah, see, okay, I get all this that you're talking about, JD, and it actually sets up my next thing that I want to talk about perfectly. I appreciate your call and being out there. We have open conversations on college campuses and maybe in your private life, whatever. Marxism, and for the life of me, I don't understand why this is the case. Marxism is not shunned. If you're sitting around, by and large, and I'm saying the overwhelming majority of people in polite society sitting around in your country, and you're sitting with a peer group of people and you're having a conversation about politics, right? And if somebody at the table says, you know what I've been thinking? The Nazi agenda was pretty, we should pursue that. I mean, that would be the way to go. You would be outraged and horrified and disgusted, and you'd probably not want to spend any time with that person. You'd be like, wait a minute, what are you talking about? You're talking about mass genocide? You're talking about all this stuff? Nobody runs around, nobody with sanity runs around extolling the virtues of National Socialism, of Nazism. But when it comes to Marxism? Oh, you know, it's an alternative governing theory. I mean, it's another way of looking at things. No, it is not. No, it is not. Marxism has been responsible for the murders of hundreds of millions of people on the planet. Imagine you were sitting at a dinner party and you were talking to somebody and they said to you, you know, it's just so great to talk to you. Have you ever thought about cannibalism? Cannibalism is a really remarkable way to live because, you know, it's a great way to eat. You can enjoy the lifestyle that way and do all that kind of stuff. You would say, get the hell away from me. You'd be like, get away from me. You're talking to me about cannibalism. Think of any other societal taboo. You know, I'm not going to get into them, but you can think of what they are in the top of your head, right? Cannibalism, this and that sort of thing. Marxism should be regarded as the same disgusting ideology as Nazism, as cannibalism, as any of the stuff that violates the social taboos and norms. And yet we look at it and go, well, it's just Steve's a Marxist. Marxists have enslaved and have destroyed and have murdered hundreds of millions of people. It ought to be shunned. And don't tell me, well, socialism's different. It's all a command and control model. That's what it is. One of the things that I find to be most objectionable when you look at what Hitler did in the Third Reich in Germany were these horrible racial theories that they came up with to subjugate and dehumanize other people. When I hear phrases like race theory or racial theory, I get shades of Margaret Sanger, Karl Marx, the Third Reich, people who want to judge people by some box that they've created rather than respecting the individual. Got into a very spicy conversation yesterday with a caller who, threw the you people card at me. I don't believe in the you people card. I believe in you, the person, you, the individual. And all you have with these ideologies, whether it's Marxism or communism, Nazism, socialism, all you have are ways of controlling and denying human beings their innate and inherent dignity. That's all it is. It's a matter of people control. And that's why we fought against Japanese militarism, Italian fascism, National Socialism, and at the end of World War II, why we continued to press the case against the communists in Soviet Russia. The fact that the Soviet Union collapsed when it did is a fundamentally great blessing for humanity, and the shame of it is that it didn't take all the regimes with it. Cuba, North Korea, China. The people of China are, for lack of a better word, an enslaved people. The people of Cuba are an enslaved people. Some of the most virulent racists are people in the Cuban Communist Party. Venezuela is a hellhole. All of these are nation states that have put upon their citizens the yoke of human servitude. Go read about Che Guevara and what he used to do. And then tell me that you're going to look at a kid walking around on a college campus with a Che Guevara t-shirt and you're going to look at him as making a legitimate point? No, thank you. In the same way that I wouldn't want to see Heinrich Himmler on a t-shirt, I wouldn't want to see Karl Marx on a t-shirt, Vladimir Lenin on a t-shirt, Fidel Castro on a t-shirt, Hugo Chavez on a t-shirt, Maduro on a t-shirt, Kim Jong-un on a t-shirt. None of them should be celebrated.
News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT, Brent Witterbull Show. Great to be here with you. Let's check in with our good friend Jim. Jim, how are you? Welcome to the show.
I'm good. Thank you for letting me on, my friend.
It is good to have you on, my friend.
Yes. That speech by AOC, if you just took every time she said jail and replaced it with the word Congress, it would be perfect. Congress should not be used as a holding facility for people that are mentally ill.
Oh, my gosh. That's really good. You're saying it shouldn't be a human garbage can? The Congress should not be a human garbage can? Okay, very good.
Just play it back and put Congress. Say Congress.
Yes, that's right. I'll edit it in. I'll just say Congress. That's right. But what's on your mind today?
Terry's phone call got me to thinking. I told you, he is solid gold Americana. He's born on the anniversary of D-Day. You can't.
That's right.
Just like Ron Kovic, if you recall, I called in a memorial about somebody, and the reason it has to be told is because he never talked about it. The story of Sergeant Robert McMullen, who was on the beaches of Omaha Beach that day. And if you can indulge me, or I can call in on Sunday. Are you taking calls Sunday?
Yeah, but it'll be like 4 o'clock in the morning your time. So, tell the story of Roger McMullen. We've got a few minutes.
All right, I'll encapsulate as much as I can. Robert McMullen was with the Big Red One. He was assigned to one of the 37 Sherman tanks that were equipped with burlap hoop skirts that were designed to float these Shermans onto the beach and support the Rangers that were attacking Pont du Ha, the cliff where the 88s were raining down hell on the beaches. And all of this Sherman tanks, only one of them made it, and that one immediately got stuck on the beaches. McMullen's tank capsized because of the surf and the weather. His crew was lost, and he waded ashore, fought his way onto the beach, fought with whatever elements that he was with into France, was captured somewhere around Belgium, put on a train, a freight car, rail car, to go to a Stalag somewhere in Germany, and the train was strafed by a P-51 who most likely thought it was an ammo train and took a 50 caliber round in his leg.
Wow.
His leg was amputated in the Stalag, and he spent the entirety of the rest of the war in a Stalag. And when he got out, he went on to public service, and he retired from the general administrator of the VA hospital in Ferguson some years ago and has passed away.
Wow.
The way I ran across this story is I was dating his mother-in-law, and he was an Army officer.
Wait. You were dating his mother-in-law?
Yes. His wife was an Army doctor, and he married her, and he had to go to OCS. He actually went to do all his medical training, and they sent him to OCS. As soon as he showed up at the obstacle course, which is run by the Rangers, they asked him, so are you related to Robert McMullen? Kind of the joke. And he goes, yeah, that's my grandfather.
Wow.
Get out of here. And they all give him, so you're related to Robert McMullen because he's somewhat of a legend among the Rangers.
Wow.
he says, yeah. So, he never knew. He never knew that he had a wooden leg.
Wow.
That he walked with a limp, and he never talked about the war. And that's why we have to remember it. We have to replay this and let people know what kind of great Americans were there and why we're able to have this interactive capability we enjoy today.
You know, it's fascinating what you just talked about, Jim, because when you really dive into this, if we were to transpose, and I hate to do this because it's not really an accurate representation, but if we were to transpose the media of today and have them covering the expected invasion of Europe at D-Day, and obviously we know that there would be some measure of operational security, but one can envision these soft gummy bear type reporters standing on the beaches telling the people of America how we have no chance at winning this thing. The Nazis are too powerful. It's our fault anyways. Leaking where the landing spots were going to be. Talking about how we're not going to be able to get to Saint-Michel and all these other places. It's incredible when you really think about that, how we went from this. I mean, you want to talk about against all odds invasion of Europe, and you've got Eisenhower writing essentially a resignation letter for when this thing might not work, and you've got all of that, and you think about the media today and how they would cover this. It's heartbreaking to think about, but I'm so happy to know that generation would not have to see that sort of a media play out that way, because we were unified in our efforts to defeat the German war machine, the Italian fascists, and, of course, Japanese militarists.
Do we have more time? Because I have another story that relates to coronavirus, the way they handled it in the Second World War.
Okay, I don't, but can you call me back next week and talk about that? That would be so great, man. I'm sorry, because I'm up against it. It is the Brent Winterville Show, News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Great to be here with you. Happy to be spending this time on a beautiful Friday in the Queen City. I'm reading this piece over in the Charlotte Observer. It's just got me shaking my head as I read this. North Carolina troopers nabbed 190 speeders going 86 miles per hour and above during a pre-Memorial Day enforcement crackdown on Interstate 485 in the Charlotte area. That's according to an analysis done by the Charlotte Observer. One of the drivers, of those drivers, 31 were accused of driving at 95 miles per hour or above during the four-day campaign. The data shows the posted limit there on 485 is 70 miles per hour. So what happened? Well, drivers who upped their speeds during the COVID-19 pandemic when fewer people were on the road are getting back out there and kind of picked up where they left off, said Trooper Ray Pierce, talking to the Charlotte Observer today. Majority of our collisions are still due to speed. How fast are people going? This is an incredible thing. Remember that terrible, terrible crash that took place on July 3rd of last year when Lynn Sherrill lost four of the people she loved most, her son, Matthew Obester, her artistically gifted daughter-in-law, Andrea Obester, her horse-loving 12-year-old granddaughter, Elizabeth, and her full-of-life 9-year-old granddaughter, Violet. Sherrill had hoped for many more joyous days and years with her family, but they were lost because of an accident that took place as a result of speed. Dakia Charles was driving his 1992 Cadillac down Charlotte's Outer Belt when police said was traveling at a speed of 120 miles an hour, changed lanes, then his car slammed into a box truck, which ran off the road, careened across the median, and collided with two other cars traveling in the opposite direction. That family was wiped out as a result of that excessive speed. But it is in digging into the numbers that I'm absolutely stunned by some of these numbers. Part of the problem, experts say, is that unlike drunken driving, there's little public stigma against speeders. So someone gets a DUI, there's a social stigma there. Somebody gets a ticket for being a lead foot. There's no such stigma. In some circles, it's even glorified, they note. Street racing involving drivers who sometimes top 180 miles an hour on the streets is on the rise in some communities. Residents and law enforcement officers are saying, but all too often, excessive speed proves deadly. It's dangerous, experts say, because it leaves drivers with less time to react and greatly increases the distance needed to stop a car. How bad is it? Triple-digit speeds have become commonplace on the state's highways. During a five-year period examined by the Observer and the News and Observer, about 20,000 drivers in North Carolina were charged with exceeding 100 miles per hour on the roads. Some reached nearly 200 miles an hour on the roads. A Raleigh man was charged in 2018 with going 197 miles per hour on the interstate. From 2019 to 2020, the number of drivers ticketed for going 100 miles per hour or more rose 69%. That's horrifying. The notion that you're going to be doing 180 miles an hour, 197 miles an hour. Mitch Geratz is a state trooper. He said he recently clocked a Dodge Charger going 128 on Interstate 85 in Cabarrus County. Then, with Garax in pursuit, the driver barreled onto Interstate 485 in Charlotte, where he hit 175. He ran out of gas. It's the only reason why I caught him, he said, the officer said. It's frightening. You've got a lot of folks that are just trying to get to and from. They don't have the reaction speeds. You think you're out there on the speedway. You're out on a public road. People's reaction times are different. Sometimes people merge and they don't put their blinker on. You've got new people, newly licensed people that are driving, especially kids. That's absurd that you would race those speeds. I mean, it's just absurd. There's no other word for that. It's absolutely insane and absurd. And I don't think we ought to be standing for it, frankly. What can we do about it? You're going to have to increase the punishments and the penalties. It's the only way you can handle the situation. Joe Biden came out today and was touting his jobs creation earlier today. This is cut number 27 we're going to play. Cut number 27. Joe Biden came out and he said, look, jobs are looking pretty good here in the United States of America. Let's hear Joe Biden's breakdown on the jobs.
That means we have now created over 2 million jobs in total since I took office. More jobs than ever been created in the first 4 months of any presidency in modern history. Triple the rate of my predecessor, 8 times the rate of President Reagan. The unemployment rate is now below 6% for the first time since the pandemic hit. The first 14 months, first time in 14 months, we saw the largest decline in the number of long-term unemployed more than an entire decade in the last 10 years.
You know why those are record numbers for those jobs? Because you had a pandemic and the entire economy was shut down, Joe. Come on. You didn't do something magical to create all these record numbers of jobs. And I love how he throws in Ronald Reagan and Donald Trump. Why don't you tell us about what the Obama-Biden job creation picture looked like for the entirety of the 8 years that you guys were in office? I got news for you. It's pretty weak. Here's Joe Biden also. This is cut 26. This is Joe Biden explaining how these jobs happened. No, seriously, you try to follow along. You really want to challenge your kid? Make them diagram the following sentence. Go.
Long-term unemployment dropped by the second largest amount ever recorded. Not only that, but the signs of further progress are already here. This report is based on a weekly, a week in early May. That's how they determine the job rate, growth or loss. We have growth, and that was in that week in May, we only had 35% of working age adults had been fully vaccinated. Now they were still all wearing masks. Since then, 21 million more adults have gotten vaccinated.
That's not a jobs number, man. That's a vaccine number. 704-570-1110, News Talk 1110-993 WBT. We're going to head on over to Boomer Von Cannon. We'll get Bo Thompson on the other side. Boomer, how the roads look? News Talk 1110-993 WBT. Brett Whittable alongside my very good friend, Bo Thompson, from the Bo Thompson Morning Show. Good to have you back in here, my friend.
Hey, man. Happy weekend almost.
Happy weekend. Question for you, because the Tokyo Olympics, the Japanese Olympics, are becoming, you know, a super hot topic. I saw something earlier today, not safe for work, so I'm not going to talk about the one story I saw earlier. But now Olympic teams are arriving in Japan, and they're not allowed to even go for a walk outside. What is going on over there?
Well, they're, 7 weeks away?
Yes, sir.
Give or take, or actually maybe it is exactly seven. Do the math on the calendar, but they're close. I got to be honest with you. I'm surprised they're still going ahead. With all that I'm hearing coming out of Japan, they're 3% vaccinated for the country.
It's incredible.
You take 3% versus where we are, which is well past that, and you talk about, now granted, they're not having any outside fans,
right?
They're only good, and they don't know yet if they're going to have local spectators. But it just seems to me like, based on everything I was hearing out of Japan, it sounded like it was almost a foregone conclusion that this was going to get canceled, and here we are. I mean, I don't know what the point of no return is, but I would think we're close.
Well, where it's going to also get challenging is you've got people from all over the world that are media, right? I mean, you are going to have a lot of media present, aren't they? You're going to have to just to have the coverage going back to home countries, I would guess.
Yeah, I mean, in the media, and then, with each team, there's the competitors, and then there's the support staff. So there's a lot more people from the outside that come in just in who you see march around the track at the beginning. So while there won't be, foreign spectators, mm-hmm. there's still enough people, you would think, to fill a small arena. So
yes.
I go back to the point of, I didn't think we'd get this close and still be talking about it. I want the Olympics to happen because I love the Olympics, but this just seems to me like it's got an unusual situation written all over it.
Yeah, it sure does. In fact, I mean, to be honest, I hadn't even really given it a whole lot of thought until I started watching some of these stories that are moving, and it's certainly interesting. Senator Josh Hawley is calling on Fauci to resign after this email dump. He wants a full investigation. This is not likely to happen, but there has to be some clarification here, because you did have the Freedom of Information request honored. 10,000 emails went out. He ought to be questioned about some of the stuff that he wrote and talked about in some of these messages to other health professionals.
Well, speaking of what I would think would be a foregone conclusion, I mean, he's already been called to testify on Capitol Hill for lesser things of controversy than this.
Yes.
Right? I mean, we've seen him there several times. I mean, the most recent time, I believe, is when he had that back and forth with Senator Rand Paul, which, by the way, via social media, has been an interesting subplot of this week. As you watch these emails come out, and what is it, Rand Paul tweeted, "Told you so,"
right,
days ago. So I'm assuming, I guess, but then again, I guess maybe I assume that the Olympics maybe wouldn't make it this far without being canceled. I assume, as I sit here and talk to you, that based on the events of this week, that we're headed towards some sort of, I mean, at the very least, some sort of testimony on Capitol Hill to clarify things.
Yeah, I would hope. He's got to answer these questions. He's the highest paid federal employee, by the way. He makes $417,000 a year, and he's tasked with a great responsibility. I think he owes it to us to talk as many times as he's requested to by the oversight.
Agreed. It's at this time, when we used to be in grade school, it was called, what, the overhead projector?
Yes, the overhead projector.
At least in this situation, it may be him testifying and them showing slides on the overhead screen. Let's scrutinize this particular email.
You're right. What did you mean, they? Who's the they here? I want to give you an opportunity to correct the record from earlier this morning. I understand we were talking about National Donut Day. I contended that an apple fritter is in the donut family. Did you want to walk back your assault on the dignity of the apple fritter?
Well, I'm not disputing that it's in the donut family, but I'm not going to walk back the fact that I don't like them. Now, what you need to know is, after we had that conversation,
yes.
So I ran, our news guy this morning, Jeff Atkinson, I ran and I told him I was going to do this because it being Ty Boyd Day and all, I ran a very, a lengthy Ty Boyd retrospective coming out of my 9 o'clock news.
Yes, sir.
And I told Jeff that. So during that, Jeff went down to Dunkin' and brought us donuts, and he brought TJ a special bag. And what do you think was in that bag?
An apple fritter.
An apple fritter.
But you kept it in a special. They always do that too with the special bag. I've always wondered about that.
Well, I think they were doing that in deference to me. Don't put the apple fritter in the same box as the donuts. You're both not going to touch them.
The secret shame of the fritter lovers. That's what it is.
Here's what it is. I don't even know if it's every apple fritter. Maybe I should not be so discriminatory. But
yes.
Well, I just have this. When I was a kid, my mom used to always go to the store, and she would buy these store, and they weren't Dunkin' or Krispy Kreme.
Right.
A lot of places you go now, you can buy the brand name, but she would buy the store brand.
Yes.
And she would buy the regular donuts, and she would buy these apple fritters. And I don't know. That created the aversion. I didn't like them, and I still stay away from them, as you found this morning, to this day.
This is great stuff, man. I appreciate the good spirit.
We're Friday strong.
Who you got coming up on Monday? What's happening on the Bo Thompson Show Monday?
Oh, Monday is a guy that John Stewart, who
yes.
is the 9th District GOP chair.
Uh-huh.
He is right there in the mix this weekend at the NCGOP convention. And he also has been the lead delegate the last two cycles at the RNC and has been kind of my guy at the last two conventions. And, he's on from time to time.
Sure.
Talking various things, but he's going to be coming off what will be a huge weekend, which is already underway, in Greenville, North Carolina, with the NCGOP convention. So he's going to be in the House on Monday. We may have some special guests connected to what happens this weekend, and he'll be here with me on Monday. Got Beth Troutman on Tuesday, and then Jerry V, former
nice.
WBT-er, will be with me on Wednesday.
Looking forward to hearing him, man. That is so cool. Have a wonderful weekend, Bo Thompson. I appreciate you being there, and give my best to John Stewart.
I hope your weekend is filled with apple fritters.
I'm going to try to get some. Thanks, buddy. I appreciate you being out there. It's Bo Thompson. Oh, Bo Thompson Show Monday starting at 5 a.m. I'm Brett Winterbull. News Talk 1110 993 WBT. News Talk 1110 993 WBT. Brett Winterbull Show. I want to dedicate the remainder of this program to fritters and honey buns. Fritters and honey buns are legitimate members of the donut empire. I'm getting thumbs downs and derisions from so many. Now people are asking me about bear claws. Bear claws are more akin to the biscuit family than they are, let's say, to the donut family. Look, here's the deal. You go in a donut shop, what can you get? You can get your obvious donuts. You can get your cronuts. You can get your maple bars and all that kind of stuff. But you can also get muffins. They have delicious muffins. They have fritters. They have honey buns. They have any number of things. And so I am not going to bisect and dissect the different sorts of choices. For example, who eats just like a plain cake donut? You eat a plain cake donut, you're going to get all plugged up. You got to drink it with coffee. You know, you got to eat it. You got to put coffee down there because otherwise it's like eating sawdust. The fluffy ones are nice. You know, the yeasty ones, those are really good. But I'm sorry, I got to speak up for the fritter. And why the heck is it that there's only apple fritters available? I want other fritters. I want other more adventurous fritters. Mango fritters, papaya fritters, coconut fritters. That's what no, I'm not going to have any vegetable fritters. We don't need vegetable fritters. Somebody asked me if a hush puppy is any part of the donut family. I'm going to leave that out there. I'm going to leave. I don't know what that is. I don't know if the hush puppy falls into the donut category. That's going to be up to you. But I will tell you this right now. You can take my fritter when you can pry it from my cold, dead hands. I will have a fritter in each hand. I will have an apple fritter in each hand. And you know what? I'm proud to know that TJ has my back because he's a fritter guy, too. Fritters are absolutely... See, how did I know this was going to catch fire? No, this is catching fire. We have Fritter Nation showing up and representing. Let's jump out and talk to Marianne. Hello, Marianne. Welcome to the show.
Hey there. How are y'all doing this evening?
I'm doing great. Thank you for calling.
My pleasure. I just was listening to you guys this morning when Bo first started talking about the fritters. And I've got to tell you, I think you guys are being kind of unfair to him with his pastry fears, because it's a classic case of fritter fright.
It is fritter fright. Exactly. I'm gonna give him the pass on that then. That's what he's got.
Yeah, those who run in pastry circles know that it's just a common case of fritter fright,
mm-hmm.
and it's just something that he's gonna have to spend a lot of dough.
Yes, yes. Marianne for the win. Great stuff. Marianne's got that. Oh, Daryl. Hold on, Daryl. Hello, Daryl. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind, sir?
Hey, man. How you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks.
I'm trying to pull out the coffee, but hush puppies?
Yes, sir.
That's cornbread. That's cornbread, man.
Yeah, but cornbread could be sweet. I can get cornbread. I can put butter on it and a little sugar on
yeah.
it. I mean, that's good stuff.
But it's a cornmeal base. Cornmeal.
Yeah.
Which, if you ever tasted Linda's cornbread...
I'll check it out. I appreciate that, Daryl. Okay, one more. Kathleen,
hi,
how are you?
I really enjoy your show, so thank you. But I called about the origin of the donut, and I think this is correct. I'm 99% sure, but anyway, mm-hmm. World War II, they were trying to make something, and so the soldiers. And so they got some dough, and they actually boiled it in water in their helmets. And that's really how the first kind of donut came about.
What? There were no donuts before World War II?
You may need to check that on the internet, but I'm pretty sure that's true.
Okay, I'll check it out. Okay, now I'm getting competing information now. Because supposedly Hanson Gregory is said to have invented the ring-shaped donuts in 1867 during a sea voyage. Definition of donuts. So here's the official definition of a donut. Donuts are defined as small cakes made of rich, light dough that often has a jam, jelly, custard, or cream filling. That sounds like a fritter. The fritter's got hunks of apple in it. And it's got a glaze. Right? It's glazed. It's got a sugar glaze on top of it. But Hanson Gregory is a guy that they're saying was a donut inventor. How could humanity progress all the way to 1867 without someone saying, you know what, I'm in the mood for some donuts. Whip me up some donuts. Come on. Don't you think that you would have had it earlier than that? Think about like all the European cuisine and stuff like Napoleon. I mean, I know he invented the Napoleon, right? That was him. But my gosh, that's all I'm saying. I want to expand. Look, I believe in a living, breathing definition of pastries and donuts. So I want to be inclusive. I don't want to build a wall around the donut kingdom. I want to invite the fritters in. I want to have the fritters feel welcome. I want to have the I'll have the bear claws feel welcome because I can't be exclusionary in that regard. The muffins, the delicious muffins, those strudel even. Yes, that's right. Little hand pies. That's right. Fried hand pies. Those can also come into the donut family. I believe in expanding the opportunity and definition for all donuts alike. And by the way, why do they call them donut holes when they're solid? Like munchkins. You say, oh, I want a donut hole. Well, that's not a hole. It's just a little tiny baby part of the donut. These are the questions that keep me awake at night.
You fill it in.
You fill it in. 704-570-1110, News Talk 1110-993-WBT. News Talk 1110-993-WBT, Brett Winterbull Show. It's that time of the week.
Yeah. Are there any donuts left in there?
There are. Yeah, there are some in here. We'll leave you some. I found the list of the 16 most popular. The donuts are ranked 16 to 1, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
What'd you find?
Donut holes.
Yeah.
Number 16.
Yeah.
Cronuts, 15.
Okay.
Potato donuts, 14.
Oh.
I know. Maple bacon is 13.
Ooh.
Pershing donuts, they're basically like the honey buns.
Oh, okay.
Those are 12. 11 sugar donuts, powdered sugar.
Oh, I like those.
10 cream-filled donuts.
Oh, I don't, you know what, I'm not crazy about those. They're so rich.
They're very rich. Yeah. 9 cake, just the cake-flavored donuts, you know, the cake donuts.
Yeah.
Frosted donuts at 8.
Okay.
7 is crullers.
Oh, yeah.
Long Johns are 6.
I'll wear those in the wintertime.
Ah, very good. It's just those long ones with the chocolate on them.
Yeah.
5 is a jelly donut. 4 is a cider donut.
Mm.
3 is old-fashioned donuts. 2 is a fritter donut. And 1 is a glazed donut.
Ah, glaze. Krispy Kreme.
That's
KKD.
You can't not love that.
Hey, now, you know, at 6:50, we have an interesting story. Most people think that Donut Day is just about selling more donuts, right?
Right.
But it's actually meant to honor the Donut Dollies. Do you know who they were?
No.
Women who went to war in World War I and served American troops donuts on the front lines.
That is incredible.
Yeah. So we'll tell you all about that.
So I'm shooting it out with the Kaiser's guys, and they're bringing me a hot donut.
Really?
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah. Hot donuts now. what else do we have coming up? Well, we're going to lead off tonight with a strange story out of Huntersville. 4 people dead at a trailer park.
Yeah.
Killer took his own life. But what's weird is cops in Huntersville basically found a body a day for 3 days and said nothing to the public about it until today.
I wonder if they thought it was a serial killer.
Well, no. They indicated that they didn't think the public was in danger. So did say at one point, well, we started to write a press release and found another body.
Oh, my gosh.
It's a little strange.
It's unbelievable.
We'll get the latest at 6:20 on the heart transplant for Greg Olson's little boy.
Oh,
still
yeah.
Still going on.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And then at 6:35, good old Anna will have the strange news of the week. She says she's got some good stuff.
That's outstanding. I'm looking forward to that.
All right.
Hey, can I share with you one last little story real
Absolutely.
Quick? So we saw the meat packing place, and we've seen the pipelines. Do you know who's now getting hacked by cyber attack?
You're going to say Krispy Kreme?
No. This is really bad. Local television stations are now getting hit.
Seriously?
WFTV in Orlando
and
PXI in Pittsburgh, both owned by Cox Media Group, they are now being held with ransomware. They're hitting local TV stations now.
Well, you know, under a previous owner here couple of years ago, we got hacked.
Wow.
And paid Bitcoin.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll hope for the best here, my friend.
Absolutely.
All right. We'll see you coming up. That's Mark Garrison. He's got Charlotte at 6 coming up just after 6 and get you up to date on all the other stuff that's happening. Yeah, this story is moving out of, first it was gas, then it was meat, now it's local television stations. At least 2 TV news stations have been completely offline since Thursday in what cybersecurity experts say appears to be a ransomware attack on their parent company. They're owned by Cox Media Group. It's WFTV in Orlando and NBC affiliate WPXI in Pittsburgh. They were told Thursday by managers to shut down company computers and phones. I mean, you're running a TV station. You need computers and you need phones. We're only able to communicate with each other over personal phones and text messages, said a WFTV employee who's not authorized to speak for the company, requested not to be named. So far, both stations are still able to put together local broadcasts, but they've been limited in what they can do. An IT incident that spans multiple organizations in a company is almost always a ransomware attack, said Alan Liska, an analyst at the cybersecurity company Recorded Future. Brett Callow is a threat analyst at Emissoft. He agreed. He said, the most likely cause by far of any incident that involves unplanned and widespread IT disruption is ransomware or the detection of malware that can be used to deploy ransomware. Basically, the other things which could potentially cause such a shutdown are far less likely. In Pittsburgh, the IT network staff began shutting down the company's servers as a precaution Thursday morning. Since then, we've all been locked out, leaving staff unable to access emails and internal programs used for their broadcasts. The employee said it's pretty crippling at the moment. Hackers have steadily attacked American businesses, schools, hospitals with ransomware for several years, but the problem only recently became an emergency for the federal government after an attack on the Colonial Pipeline Company. Then on Sunday, JBS, the meat packaging company, ended up getting caught up in it as well. It's really it's a very serious situation. I worked at another organization before I came here, and they would do these tests. They wouldn't tell you when they were doing them. They would do these tests every 10 days, and they would send you fake emails to see if you'd open them. And these things looked super real, like super real. They would do stuff like in the subject line, it would be like urgent notification of your benefits. But it would come, it looks like it's coming from the company, right? And I would, most of the time, I would just delete it. I'd be like, I'm going to delete it. But there was one that particularly caught my attention, and I was like, whoa, this looks like it's kind of a big deal. And I clicked it, and it was the address was just off by one letter. And I immediately got an email that said I had to go into training. They had to, like, you had to stop what you were doing, log into this portal, and basically get yelled at by the IT department for saying, why did you open that? Why did you open that? And you're like, well, you guys send these out like every 10 days. Like, I'm not opening any more emails from the company. That's what I did. The last 2 months I was with them, I didn't open another email from even real emails. I got out a lot of conference calls that way because I wouldn't be notified. That's the thing. You know what? You'll never be able to hack the donuts. That's what's important because they make them fresh and warm and hot every day. And that's what makes us one of the greatest countries in the history of humankind. Our pastries. All of them. Even the ones that you don't recognize. Thanks so much to Josh and Anna and Boomer and Mark and Brett Jensen. And, of course, our very, very good friend, checking in with us, as he often does, Jim in San Diego. And my friend Bo Thompson as well. That's going to do it for us. I am Brett Winterbull, News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT.